It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on, Cardinals fans, and welcome back into the channel. Brendan Schaefer, St. Louis Cardinals writer, joined today by Josh Jacobs of the Deal in the Cards pod, formerly Newt News. You know him, you love him, and we did a podcast last week, Josh, where at the tail end, one of us brought up the point of, yeah, you know, in 2025, things could look a lot differently if this 2024 season doesn't go well for the Cardinals, and I think that's certainly true. And I said, that's a longer topic than we should cover at the very end of an hour-long podcast. Let's go ahead and catch up again next week. So that's what we're here to do today, is kind of talk about, I want to lay out the ground rules first so that people don't get carried away with what we're saying. This is going to be a hypothetical conversation. Assuming the 2024 season goes poorly for the Cardinals and they lose whatever it is, we can kind of talk about if there's layers or tiers to it that could determine how the team would move forward after a season like that. But if they lose 88 games and they're not in the mix again, are the Cardinals going to potentially move in a different direction? Because when you look at the payroll matrix and the salaries that they're committing for years beyond 2024, it is kind of interesting that they've set themselves up perhaps a little bit of a parachute to be able to pull the lever and shed some payroll and maybe do what I think you and I both agree, Josh, would be more classified as a retool than a rebuild. But I'm kind of curious for your take on this conversation. We'll keep it open-ended. Again, hypothetical, but we decided let's go ahead and get into it as long as everybody understands that we're not saying, oh, this season's over, they're 11-14, Cardinals are done for. I don't think that's what we're saying. We're ready to let the season play out. But let's say it goes poorly. Where do they go from there? What are your kind of general thoughts as we get into this, Josh?
Yeah, and like you said, I see this, again, hypothetical world that they have to blow it up again this year. It's more of a retool than a rebuild. We'll get into the specific names a little bit later, but there's clearly four, five, six names coming off the books this year that you can easily trade for spare parts of the deadline. Some would have more value than the other. Let them walk in free agency. You lower the payroll a little bit. And then you look at the lineup right now, most of it's guys who are pre-arb, under team control for a long time, young bats. You've got young pitching coming up. So there's not a reason to go full-scale Oakland Athletics, Chicago White Sox here. You're not going to see the Cardinals bottom out and be a 50-win team next year. But could they go and take a few steps back and be more, okay, clearly they're the fourth or fifth best team in the NL Central, at least on paper going into the year. And they try to have like a 2022 Cincinnati Reds type season or 2023 Reds type season where they're like a year or two away. They're not really spending big yet. They're trying to figure out which pieces of their young core are like the actual core and then go and trade for other pieces, use all the different prospects that are coming up. They have the number 7 overall pick in this draft. Obviously, if things don't go well, they'll have another high pick the next year. They can revamp the system up and then kind of reset under whether it's Chaim Bloom, Randy Flores, someone from the outside of the organization. I'd say more of a reset than a full scale blow it all up. I think you agree with that. Anything else that you would put with that besides maybe trading off some of the older pieces? I guess bigger question for me too is, would this accelerate the John Mozeliak timeline for you at all? I think it would, but who knows what the DeWitts would do with that.
So I think that is an interesting angle of the conversation too, is would that be a natural sort of stepping back point for John Mozeliak if this year goes poorly? We know he's under contract through 2025, and he said in February of 2023 that, hey, this contract extension that I'm signing now, kind of view it as the last go-round. And I don't remember specifically the words he said at the time, but very clear it was sitting on that Cardinal patio outside the clubhouse in Jupiter. Like, oh, this is what he means. Like, he's talking about sort of winding this down. And at the time when things were going well, they were coming off of a playoff year, the way it was framed was sort of, we're going to start to delineate some of these responsibilities to others in the front office so that it would be more of a gradual step back. I think that was originally the plan. And then 2023 happened to where, I got to be very hands-on and sort of the front and face of this still to try and fix it before I get out of here so as not to tarnish the legacy. Because Mo, before 2023, despite the frustrations Cardinals fans may have with him, has built or had built at that point a really solid legacy. So I think that's why he's a little more hands-on, and you really did not see that sort of delegation of different responsibilities to quite the extent that I think already would have been expected so far. So it's a natural question. If they're bad again, that's two straight years. DeWitt is never going to fire John Mozeliak, in my view. He's never going to relieve him of his duties. If and when that should happen, I think it comes as sort of a mutual agreement, and it's got to almost be Mo's idea. But I think Mo gets the terrain. And if they lose 90 games again, he's sitting there going, okay, I understand it. It might just be time, because it's going to coincide with perhaps a step back that the organization, in my opinion, sort of plotted in at the very beginning of this season. I'll talk about why this conversation's even real in the first place. It's specifically because the Cardinals didn't do what many fans wanted to see, which is sign multiple pitchers to those 4- and 5-year contracts and just commit. Like they did it with Sonny Gray, but only for 3 years. And then you look at the other guys they brought in, 1-year contracts with team options, right? Very specific styles of deals to where you coincide with Goldschmidt expiring. They didn't extend him, which kind of goes anti the Cardinal way of doing these things when it comes to legacy players. Yeah, let's kind of let this one play out. And folks are saying, where was that 5 years ago with Matt Carpenter? But that's sort of the spot that they're in. And then you look at Nolan Arenado, we know he's on the books, but let's be honest, if there's no Goldschmidt and there's no spending on pitching, remember this year, the Cardinals are paying 5 starting pitchers $11+ million each. They did invest in pitching, just not in the way people wanted to see. I think the reason for that is so that they could keep their options open a little bit. You can ask whether or not the Bally Sports situation and the uncertainty there has anything to do with it in terms of the timing of why the Cardinals might be going this route. I think it's that. I think it's the bad season last year. It's not, you know, they don't have that edge over the rest of the NL Central that all the Cardinal fans and folks within the organization, I think, are accustomed over the years to having. That's not really a thing anymore. So all of these factors, Josh, I think play into what the Cardinals sort of set up to this point. And unfortunately, they are 11-14, so you could see a world in which maybe it doesn't go well, and that's why I think we talk about it. But yeah, there are a lot of different machinations and ways this could go, I guess, because you threw it to me, and then I talked for 9 years about sort of the background on it. I'll go back to your question about could it accelerate the Mozeliak timeline. I certainly think it could. Again, I think it has to come in a mutual way, the way that's delivered. But could I see a John Mozeliak the end of this year, if they lose 89 games, say, I think it's time for a fresh voice. We did some things that we thought could make us competitive. And he'll say, you know, for injury reason or whatever the reasons might be, it didn't quite work out this year. It's time that I kind of step back a little bit. I'll still be involved. He's going to do out the contract for 2025, but maybe in a lesser role. Kind of maybe similar to what we saw with, who was it? David Stearns with the Brewers a couple years ago when he took that step back before. Now, where is he now? He took over for somebody else. Is that
the Mets?
The Mets. Yeah. And so it's not to say that Mo is getting ready to jump ship to another org. I don't necessarily believe that would be his next move. But I do think you could see, yeah, Stearns was with the Brewers there for that year, even though it was in a different role. I could very much see that so that whoever else steps in and takes over would then get the chance to kind of put their fingerprints on so that it's not Mo wrapping up his career with a rebuild and then somebody else has to come in and go, oh, I don't like what you did here. It's like moving into a home where the furniture is all there for you, but you're like, I don't really know if I might want to change that. And you might as well just get your own furniture, right? That might be the way to do this if the Cardinals are going to have to go into a retool.
For sure. And that's exactly where I was going to go with the Mo side of things is that Randy Flores, Michael Gersh, I don't think Heimblum, I don't think any of them would turn down the job. And I'm sure all of them would prefer to make the major decisions with a Nolan Arenado. Heck, they might even look at trading Sonny Gray at this point because you're going to have, what would he be, 35?
Don't say that. Raise a good point, man.
Like, do you waste him for 2 years and then pay him, what was it, $40 million because they backloaded it in the last year to see what happens in 2026? So, like, there's just a lot of different moves they could make at that point. I could see them – they fired Mike Matheny after giving him an extension. I could see them reevaluating who they want their manager to be long-term. I think there's just a lot of big-picture questions that it would feel really weird for Mo to even make half of those decisions and the handoff to the next person. I think it's becoming more and more likely, especially with how if 2024 went poorly again, that I have a hard time believing that they would move Randy Flores or Michael Gersh into that role.
Keep and talking.
Not Heim Bloom yeah. coming out, because it would just look like the same thing again, where it's Mo's guys taking the same position. And even just from an outside perspective, I mean, if they really truly believe they needed to bring in some new voices, it doesn't. I'm a big Randy Flores guy. I love what he's done with the drafting and developing. But you look at how other organizations view the Cardinals front office right now. There's that Athletic poll where they didn't get a single vote from another front office executive.
I think it was 40 guys. 40 executives were asked about, you know, however they whatever the questions were, but they didn't end up with a vote in the top 10 or whatever the case was there.
There's like different, I think there's 15 different organizations listed and they weren't listed one time. I don't remember what the exact question was, but it wasn't just about their president of baseball operations.
Right.
It's about the front office in general. And then last year, I remember the Athletic did a poll too about talking about up and coming executives. And there wasn't a single executive listed from the Cardinals either. There wasn't any of those guys that we would throw out there. So I just don't know if baseball views them the same as how the Cardinals would pump them up to be at times. It doesn't mean they're not quality candidates, but it would seem like Heim Bloom's job to lose internally. And that would maybe be best of both worlds, where it's an outside voice that kind of got ingrained for a little bit and then they bring him through, rather than going to the Astros or the Dodgers to hire one of their executives right off the bat. But who knows, maybe something like this forces the DeWitts to go, hey, we got to totally change things up and look totally differently than we have before. Would you agree, disagree with that? I just have a hard time believing it would be Randy Flores or Michael Gersh or whoever you want to put in there that's not Heim Bloom.
I have thought from the moment that months prior I heard that Heim Bloom might, you know, there might be some interest there, that would be a logical next step if he wants it. Now, there are some things that we can play the game on paper and go, this makes sense. Put this guy here. He's still a human being. And so from what I understood, didn't want to jump right back into another lead exec role. And so maybe that's what this time period is for him, where he's kind of able to be involved, but it's not the day-to-day grind that it would be to be in that role. If he's interested in that position in the long run, and he's a humble guy and he plays it very well. He doesn't really talk to the media in terms of like stuff that's on the record. He's kind of a closed book in that regard, and for good reason, because as he views it, he goes, look, I'm just...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm just here, you know, my office is way in the back there at spring training. And like, I'm just, you know, kind of getting my footing a little bit. And he downplays his role. And in fairness, like, you may out there be looking at the guys that came over in the offseason and the Tampa connections and the Boston connections. And, you know, I go around and around with the cat. He always likes to joke on our show. Say, oh, Heim Bloom, he orchestrated it. His fingerprints are all over. And Cat says, no, that's not really how it happened. And so he's facetious when he says that. I do think there were some connections that you can say, all right, was he consulted? Was he asked about this guy or that guy and sort of weighed in? Yeah, I think that certainly is something that happened. But when you look at the parallels, and like, this is maybe not a direction that Cardinals fans are going to love me going with this, but I think it's unavoidable when you kind of break it down. If I'm Bill DeWitt and I'm thinking about, okay, we love John Mozeliak. We love what this front office has done for a long, long time, but maybe a fresh voice and a little bit of a change where we keep a lot of the old, but we also maybe bring in a little bit new, a little bit fresh to kind of gain that edge back, because he runs this team like a business. And he wants to have that edge in almost a business-like sense. You think about Heim Bloom, and obviously the pedigree from Tampa with what he did to help build up their player development system. But then you go to Boston and take that over. What's the first thing ownership made him do in Boston? the first thing ownership made him do hey, this guy Mookie Betts, he's a great player for us, but Heim, the money's not going to be there, brother. You're going to have to figure that out. You have to figure that one out. You know, our hands are tied, but we're not re-signing him. He's not getting an extension. If you're Heim Bloom, you get blamed for that Mookie Betts trade, 100%. He's the guy that traded Mookie Betts. You never get to live that down. Ownership is, as we talk about with DeWitt versus Mozeliak and where you place some of the blame if you're an unhappy Cardinal fan, ownership is kind of the final say-so on a lot of those things. And if the money's not there, the money's not there. And so you have to make that determination of, well, how do we frame this to where we can kind of get away with it? I'm going to have to try and put my trade hat on and make the best deal I can under the circumstances. Trade didn't work out for Boston. I think he was partially kind of unfairly fired for the thing that it seems they made him do in the first place with the restraints on payroll. And they go like 78-78 a couple of years. His first year there, they made the playoffs, set 278 win seasons after that, fired. Now you look at the Red Sox and some of the young pitching that they have and you go, huh, whoever was here before this, he must have gotten some good guys into the system, right? They've got like a homegrown pitching staff now. Isn't that what people have been saying the Cardinals need, right? So you've got that parallel. Who do the Cardinals have that's on a high salary that if this thing should go off the rails, you might have to make an unpopular trade?
Yeah.
See what I'm getting at a little bit? So like there are parallels that would almost suggest, and it's nothing on Mike Gersh, it's nothing on Randy Flores. It almost suggests, and it's not to say that Bill DeWitt was leading with the backup plan, like, oh, let's bring this guy in because when we're about to be bad again, this is the right guy to bring us out of it. And look what he was able to do under payroll restrictions and other places. I want that because I'll spend less and we can still be competitive. Is that not like a guy tailor-made for Bill DeWitt and the way that he would like this organization to be run with homegrown talent? He said it for years, and that was kind of the shift after Jocketty was, hey, the game's changing. We need to kind of look at this a little bit differently. And Bill DeWitt was spearheading that, putting the people in position, whether you credit Mo or you credit Lunau, or it's a combination of all the minds that he had on that. That's kind of what you're talking about. And that's why I think Heim Bloom makes almost too much sense. It's just the parallels are uncanny. If I'm Bill DeWitt and I know, look, if I'm not getting the bang for my buck, how can I find a way to decrease payroll a little bit? If I'm not going to win World Series, and we're not quite at that point right now with, again, assuming 2024 goes poorly, who could I get that could reframe the development of the pitching in our organization and can get us there to where we've got sustainable ways to win into the future? And I maybe have a fall guy that can trade Nolan Arenado that, you know, it's not going to be a popular move with fans if that's the way that it goes. And he's not going to re-sign Paul Goldschmidt and that sort of, Heim Bloom becomes a face of that. Maybe he doesn't want that. He doesn't want that smoke again because it happened to him once. But what do you think about those parallels? Because like it almost makes so much sense that I couldn't imagine it going any other way while acknowledging that right now he's merely a part-time employee who he himself doesn't want to trump up what his role has been so far.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world to me from that point, and which is it just there's too much lining up for it not to go in that direction. But again, Heim Bloom's human. He's friends with John Mozeliak before this. So they've talked about that. Maybe this is just his way of getting his feet wet, but long-term he'd rather live on the West Coast or East Coast. Like there's all these different things you can't just project onto people. It's like with free agents too. It's like, why didn't they sign X free agent over here? It's like, well, they never wanted to live in the Midwest. So it's already not going to happen. One part about the Heim Bloom thing, I think that would be an interesting fit in St. Louis is that his style of team building, I just don't think was ever going to work in a place like Boston because they're not going to accept a guy who's going to trade. I mean, not that Cardinal fans want to accept it either, but people critique it all the time, but the Cardinals organization is not going to make these rash moves to fire a Heim Bloom because he made an unpopular trade. They're going to give him the long runway here to figure things out, which in Boston, it feels like every 4 years they want to just revamp it all, rebuild, spend out weird contracts, make it work for 1 year, and then it's kind of middling the other 3 years. And that's just not how St. Louis operates. So it feels like St. Louis might be the perfect place for Heim Bloom, where he's not in Tampa, where you literally can't spend any money, and you're not in Boston or New York, where they're going to beat you at the stake here if you don't re-sign Aaron Judge or Mookie Betts or whoever the guy is there. And he can kind of play both worlds a little bit. I do wonder, though, I think it makes too much sense to trade Nolan Arenado in a situation like this if they were doing it. But, I mean, I look at the contract. It's only 3 years, 74 remaining after that, so it's not terrible. And I can see a world, too, where they think, hey, we want to keep butts in seats. We don't want to upset the fan base too much. We keep Nolan Arenado around. We have that future Hall of Famer, which they really like to always have one of those in uniform at all times. I'm also not totally sure what you get for Nolan Arenado at this point. I think the fact that the contract is lowering in value each year. So 2025, it would be about 32 million, 2026, 27 million, and then only 15 million in 2027. So if he is declining in performance, the contract really isn't that big of a deal. But do you think the Cardinals would be hell-bent on trading Nolan Arenado if this was the direction they went? Do you think that's a Nolan Arenado push at that point, a mutual decision? Because I can see a world where they keep him because you have about almost $70 million coming off the payroll this next year. So even if they just want to go youth movement, not really bring in many free agents because they get some guys for trading Goldschmidt or Kyle Gibson or whoever it is, and then they trust the young talent, they let it reset for a year. That's like $120 million payroll next year with Nolan Arenado on the books. I could see why they keep him for a little bit, especially if his trade value, because you would think if they tank this year and they don't do well, that it's probably Nolan Arenado isn't playing well. So I don't really know what team would want him. And then you might even have to eat money on the deal, which I just don't know if they'll want to do that either. So who do you think makes the push more on that? Is that a mutual decision? The Cardinals kind of push Arenado out the door. That's Nolan being like, hey, I want to end up in LA.
It's everybody. Let's paint a picture where this July Goldschmidt bounces back to where he's at least a contender is going to, again, it's just at that point about, can we get Paul Goldschmidt a ring? Right, we're going to do right by Goldie and send him somewhere he wants to go that wants him, and he'll be part of their mix as a veteran who he gets hot in October and it's over. Like, you know what he's capable of doing. What you get back is not really important, right? But you're going to save a little bit of money on it. He does need to kind of bounce back on the OPS and stuff before that becomes viable. But let's just hypothetically, because I think we could all see him being just fine this year. He's done it before and very well may do it this year. Maybe you trade a Lance Lynn. Let's say his ERA is still in the low. He's like 2.8 right now. Let's say it's like 3.2. And hey, that's got some value to a contender. He's only on a one-year deal. Maybe Gibby as well is a guy that they would, if they're truly out of it in July, which hopefully is not the case. But again, we're spending
both
today.
Both have club options too, which should be kind of appealing too, because it's like, hey, if they are really good, you get an affordable club option to pick them up. So it's not an expiring deal either. And then they have the out too if the second half blows up.
Yep. So there's a lot of – but let's talk about that. They move those three guys. Maybe they move a Ryan Helsley, right? Because where you went with it is, and we'll get deeper into the roster of else could go, and then what does that leave? Because my whole premise with this is it's going to work. Cardinals fans are going to be pissed, but it's going to work because lineup might still be kind of compelling. Like, there's enough young talent. They might have to figure it out on the pitching side, which is, it's like, Sam Roberts, keep doing your thing, because a rotation of, no one's probably taking the Michaelis money. Michaelis, Mats. Again, the Gray thing is interesting. We can get into that too. But if Gray's in there with Sem Roberta and Andre Pallante, then he is, baby. And that's, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, may not be that compelling on the pitching side. We'll get into it. The hitting, I think, could certainly be compelling. But for Arenado, that July is going down. Brother, you're talking to your agent like, all right, make it known, make it happen. Look, I don't think Arenado was responsible for the little leaks that were happening on the LA side last year. You remember in July, the media going, he wants to go to the Dodgers. And you asked Nolan about it. He's like, that's not anything to do with me. I'm not touching that. Why should he? But if, let's be real, if it happened again and his guy Goldie was being traded to, he's got the next ticket out of town. And he would deserve that, right? I'm not going to sit around in a rebuild just because the money isn't, nope. So it would be both. It would be Arenado. Everyone understanding that Arenado wouldn't want to be here if that's the direction they're going. Rightfully so, as a veteran in his early to mid-30s at that point. The contract's interesting because, as you said, not an albatross. And if he's playing decent, if he can get some power back into his game, I think there will be teams that want him. The question is, like, do you eat money as the Cardinals to try and get a better prospect? Or is it just a case of it doesn't really matter, you're just trying to get rid of the money to reset this thing? That would be disappointing if that's the route that they go. You'd rather, as a fan base, say, hey, if you can take a little bit of money and eat that in order to get a piece that's worthwhile rather than just a true salary dump, that's always going to be preferential to the fan base, who doesn't care how much money the DeWitt grandchildren have in their trust, right? Like, that's kind of the joke that Frank Cusimano always makes, and there's merit to it. So I think it would be almost mutual, but in fairness to Nolan, you can't do that to the guy, in my opinion. If they're trading Goldie and they're sending the message that, hey, this is going to be a reset. It doesn't have to be a long one. And as you said, it could be kind of like the 23 Reds, where, man, there are some compelling things about this roster. They're going to need to spend here, there, and everywhere to kind of get it to come together. But there's at least the pieces to make it happen. So you could sell it to the fan base, and I think you could get away with it. and you still could have, you know, butts in seats, which I know attendance is down right now for the Cardinals. It's down across baseball. That's a baseball-wide issue right now, not just one in St. Louis. So kind of a lot of elements there that are up in the air, Josh. But yeah, I would say when it comes to Arenado, he wouldn't be a part of that in 2025 to me, simply because it doesn't align with either side's goals at that point in time. Like, yeah. To have him reduced to a token that the fan base gets to say, hey, at least we still get to watch Nolan, that's just not fair to him. And I don't think it would help the team either to really be able to, like, everybody's going to know what it is. So you're mad that Goldie's gone. Yeah, you're mad that, but I think if it goes that direction, it's going to be sort of all in on the short-term assets plus Arenado, who's got a few years left. And then what else? So I mentioned, like, Helsley would have a ton of trade value, I would have to imagine, this July. If really looking like let's say you're in July, I don't know how many games will have been played by then, but let's say you're 36 and 48.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And Ryan Helsley has pitched in 36 wins because he's still pitched in every win on the season for the Cardinals. And you go, this guy's one of, I mean, you get some prospects, you get some pieces. Heck, last year, Royals signed Aroldis Chapman to a one-year deal, and they get Cole Reagans out of it, who's their best pitcher now. Like, that doesn't always happen that way. But Ryan Helsley, prime of his career, still closer. Chapman wasn't even really a closer at the time. That's something that could absolutely end up happening and working out in the Cardinals' favor. So I just kind of look at that, go, all right, who else could be like that? They gave a little money to Tommy Edman. Do you dump that money? You know, what does Victor Scott's season in Memphis look like? Do you feel like he could maybe hold it down by next year, or is there still some development concern there? Those are the two names that come to mind. Giovanni Gallegos has an option, club option, that I think would be declined based on the way he's performing right now. So you could find a way, Josh, and chime in on anybody else or even the guys that I just brought up, that maybe, you know, you could find a way to trim this thing. You said 120 mil with Nolan. I could see a real world, even with our braces of the guys you keep, around $100 million could be conceivable in this world where the Cardinals kind of not blow it up, but they do the things that are kind of like last trade deadline, where they say who's expiring, who are the ones that need to go, and then add Arenado into it for the sake of fairness to him, if nothing else.
Yeah. And some outside the box things too. Like if you moved Arenado's contract, that probably puts you below $100 million going into the offseason, your current payroll. You could use some of that salary flexibility not to go out and sign new players, but to give Lars Nubar that long-term extension where you're overpaying his current pre-arb years a little bit.
There you go.
You're getting the extra couple years of team control. You deal with Jordan Walker. You deal with whichever guys they designate. These are our pillars we're building along.
And the fans go, yeah, these are our guys.
Yeah.
You can find ways to sell it 100%.
Exactly. So you get up to 110, 120, but it's not because they went out and signed two new starting pitchers that are super shiny, but it's because they locked those guys in. And then in 2027, 2028, fans are feeling really good when Nubar is being paid $12 million a year instead of hitting free agency and potentially getting $25 million a year or whatever. I mean, who knows what he'll be worth then. So I think there's some stuff like that. The Ryan Helsley one's interesting to me because you can go two different paths. I mean, you look back at 2016, the Cubs gave up Gleyber Torres, who was a top 30 prospect in all of baseball, for half a season of Aroldis Chapman. So if Ryan Helsley is pitching like this right now and has one more year of control, I can't remember what the Josh Hader package was, but you can get something really significant in return for a pitcher like that. If I like throwing stuff at the wall, and the really popular thing people like to talk about right now is the Jordan Hicks thing. I wonder if there's a world where if you're like 2025 is just whatever.
Oh, baby.
Happens.
I love what you're about to say.
You try to transition Ryan Helsley to a starter in 2025. You give him maybe some kind of a contract over the year. It's maybe that's one of the extensions you hand out. And it's like, hey, we paid him probably a lot of money for a closer, but it would be really cheap for a starting pitcher if he ends up becoming that. The experiment works out. whoa, buddy, here's your frontline starter. That's really exciting for 2025. Ryan Helsley giving you five and dives, six innings at most. Or if it doesn't work out, okay, we have a dominant closer on a pretty good contract, whatever. We can live with that because our payroll is pretty low. I would much rather see them go that route with Ryan Helsley than trade him off for prospects, because at this point, like, you do have some guys coming up, especially on the pitching side, that none of them are like the I'm trying to think of, like, Paul Skenes. No one's like that.
No but one's I'm like Paul Skenes. It ain't just the Cardinals that don't have a Paul Skenes. 29 teams don't have a Paul Skenes, but no, yeah. I hear your point.
But, like, I would like to see what Tim Kentz has. I would like to see what Tekoa Roby has, even if it's late 2025, early 2026. Like, I think one of the big issues roster construction wise for the Cardinals the last, I mean, 4 or 5 years is that they continue to have to give $15 million a year to a guy who's a number four, number five starter. And so if Tim Kentz ends up being a number four starter, that seems like a disappointment. But when you're paying less than $1 million to a guy that's giving you those kind of innings, roster construction wise, that opens the doors a lot for you to be like, hey, instead of every offseason having to invest $45 million to fill these different holes, we can actually go after one of those big fish from time to time. So I like the idea of them trying to experiment a little bit here, get a little bit creative. Again, they have the number seven pick this year, and I mean, that person's not going to contribute in 2025, but you can see a world where this farm system just gets better naturally through the draft a little bit too. And again, if they're bad in 2024, then you have another top pick the next year. I do like what Randy Flores has done. So I trust the idea of this farm system getting better over time. So Ryan Helsley's one that I would much rather than see tried to do the starter experiment with him. And then Tommy Edman would make sense to trade, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, maybe you just shift Dylan Carlson to center field, even if Victor Scott's not ready, and you ride that out. And who knows, maybe he builds his trade value. You send him off over the offseason. Maybe he becomes a part of the core long-term. There's not really any other names besides the Sonny Gray one, which I think could be pretty interesting just because just timeline wise, his contract, he's $25 million next year and then $35 million in 2026. And I love Sonny Gray, but what will he be in 2026? He'll be 38 or 36. So it's like, do you want to bank when you're kind of taking a step back that your starter in 2 years at age 36 is still going to be an ace and can be a super contributor at $35 million a year? Or do you sell high on him right now? Wilson Contreras also think could be kind of interesting because he's like the hottest bat in baseball since July. And so maybe you sell high in something like that and go Ivan Herrera long-term with Pedro Pages as kind of the backup. You have Bernal coming at some point. So I can see them going a ton of different scenarios. I don't think they should do all of that, but I think all options should be on the table if you're going to take a step back like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the Helsley thing first, I'll start with that. And then I'll try to remember because you said a lot of good stuff there.
Yeah.
Helsley, I remember, I think it was in spring training, we're at his locker and someone, one of the reporters mentioned and asked him, you know, what do you think Hicks, you know, your guy Jordan is going to make a go as a starter. And Helsley kind of laughed and said, yeah, man, that's something. And, you know, good for him and everything. We said, you know, he never really let go of that, did he? And he's like, no, he always wanted it. He always wanted to, still thought he could hack it as a starter. And it wasn't that he was asked specifically about himself, but it was kind of like, I just got the sense from the conversation that it's not really as front of mind for him. Like he doesn't, you okay. Felt like with Jordan Hicks, like that he had that burning passion to be like, I got something to prove. I got that chip to be like, they miscast me. You know, I was a starter and a good one the whole way through. And I never really got a chance to blossom in my full potential with that. And so I bet when the Giants said, hey man, here's what we're thinking. I bet his eyes lit up and he thought, you're darn right. That's what I want. And so I think it was more of a just personal between the two guys. I think it was more of a thing for Jordan than it might be for Ryan. But that doesn't mean that Ryan wouldn't be amenable to it. I don't think he's any dummy. I think he understands that, look, with the different ways that he's been handled, and now they're, okay, you're going to use just as a closer this year, ninth inning traditional, a la Josh Hader, after he got kind of screwed in arbitration. Now Ryan Helsley is kind of getting that same treatment. And I don't think, if he asked for it, I don't think he's wrong to have. I think that there is some merit to the way that when you look at the ARB system, and it's not that he doesn't make him a bad teammate, but if they're going to sit there in a room and tell you, well, he didn't do this and he didn't do that, and it's like, well, what is it that you're paying me for? What do you actually want? Let's not try to have the cake and eat it too on me. Like, what is it that you need from me? And so I think in fairness, it may not, old school baseball fans maybe don't love it, but I think there's a lot of merit and look at what they're getting out of him. Look at what they're getting out of Ryan Helsley when they're not trying to ask him to be all things to all people every day. You know what I mean? So I think that there is some merit to that. I wonder if Ryan, you know, had the truth serum on, if he would say, look, I think that as a starter, that might help me health-wise, or if it's just, I'm actually pretty content that I'm getting the treatment as the closer. I'm the guy. That's kind of the way that they're using me, and it's helped my arm. It's helped me recover. It's having that stable schedule. So if he's happy as a clam where he is as that traditional ninth inning reliever, and you'll come in the 10th in a tie game, like maybe he's happy with how it is. But that is creative, and I don't think that's the kind of stuff that folks want to see the Cardinals do. Even if it's not in this specific example, I think that's the type of stuff that people say, you know what, you've lost your edge a little bit. You've lost your fastball as a front office. Maybe get some new perspective in there to be able to think about something like that, that we just don't see the Cardinals really do that. When they bring Jordan Hicks back in as a starter, it's kind of haphazard. It's at the last minute. There are a variety of reasons. They're impatient with it when it doesn't work. And the reason is because every fifth day when Jordan Hicks is walking guys and not getting through five, every Cardinal fan's going, how could they possibly have this guy in the rotation? Like, I know it's popular to say, I knew all along that he should have, you know, Jordan Hicks should have been a starter. And again, it's partially the organization's fault because they didn't really give him the legitimate runway. And so it's on both ends of it, they're getting it wrong. But those same fans do apply pressure, not like maybe a Boston, but they apply the pressure of like, look, it's win now and win always. So there's not really this time to spend tinkering with the development of a guy. The Marlins Sandy Alcantara could have done anything his first year with the Marlins and it wouldn't have mattered. They would have let him pitch through it, right? Because they said, we think these raw materials. Cardinals were never going to let, and I don't think he struggled, right, in Miami, but if he would have, it wouldn't have been an issue. They would have allowed him to kind of struggle through that, and that's part of it too with the Cardinals in a development conversation that they maybe haven't done over the years. I told you I'd remember all the great stuff you said. You said Helsley, and then I went on for that. What else did you have? What else was it that I needed to comment on from your...
Well, I'll segue into that, but then I think the development piece, 2025 could be a really interesting year where it's frustrating as a fan because you want them competing every year, but we've complained, or at least fans have complained, that they haven't given... Like, there's something wrong with the Cardinals' development system where they get from AAA to the major leagues and it doesn't pan out. And I think there's something to be said when you're Lane Thomas and you're just kind of figuring out Washington versus you're Lane Thomas and you're coming up into the Cardinals organization where they expect, or at least fans expect excellence from you right away.
Yep.
You don't produce, they scrap you. There could be a year where it's like, hey, Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman, Lars Nubar, Yvonne Herrera, all of you, like, you've got 162 games. This is your job. Figure it out. And they kind of have to go through the woes of it a little bit. And it's not going to look pretty all the time, but then you see some of these young teams where they go on these weird runs in August and September and they kind of figure it out and then they have the momentum for 2026 or something like that. Maybe that's this Cardinals team where it's like, man, it looks ugly April, May, June, but then the young guys start to figure it out a little bit. It's kind of like quadruple A for them because the games don't matter, but they can really go against the best talent in the world to figure things out. So I'd be interested to see what happens for some of those guys that, I mean, I don't have any doubt Jordan Walker's still going to be a star, but I mean, I get why people are frustrated looking at another top prospect who's struggling a little bit right now. I think it's a totally different situation, but I do wonder if this helps the Cardinals a little bit with that. One of the ones I threw out there to you, though, is maybe like a Wilson Contreras.
Yeah, it was Wilson, like, and Sonny that I was going to talk about, because I do think there's a limit to maybe the goodwill that Cardinal fans will give. You don't need a $60 million payroll, right? Like, you can, you got to have a couple of those guys as my computer bounces all around. You got to have and Wilson's the kind of guy that fan favorite.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
If he's good with it, you know, there are going to be some veterans who go, well, what about me? Why can't I get off the boat? You know, why? If there's a lifeboat for some of these guys, what about me? You don't want that mentality to kind of seep in. So if you keep Wilson and you keep Sonny, and again, I don't know personally how either of those guys might take it. If it's like, hey, this is going to look like a step back. You know, if you're Sonny, you go, hey, I'm still doing my thing. I can be a shepherd to some of these younger guys, and I've got another year. My thought with all this would be 2025 on paper, it wouldn't be that bad, and they could still project probably 75 wins, 77 wins, whatever it would be, and that's not going to make anybody happy. But they could, instead of coming into a year again this year and projecting 84, and then they win whatever, let's say they win 75 this year, then it's like, well, you fell short by 9 games in that world. It could be the kind of thing where you say, hey, 75, but you surprise people and win 84. And that's the type of roster that I think it'll look that way on paper. to where there might be enough to sell to a Sonny and a Wilson to say, hey, stay the course. And they've both got contracts that take them into at least 2026 as well, which I think is a key of this, because they can come with the promise of, hey, we're going to see what some of these kids do. You guys will lead them to whatever they're going to be in 25. And then we're going to add. We're going to be right back up there at 180, and then by then inflation, you know, $200 million payroll. That's what you can sell. I'm not saying, and you'll sell it to the fan base too. There can be a way of messaging, and maybe, you know, for all the things that Mo does really well, I think messaging has been one of the things that he has struggled with. I think I'm not saying Heim Bloom's got the job, but you could see a world in which maybe that could take a step forward and a different message, even a different voice. It may not matter who it is. It's just fatigue at this point. Mo has been the guy for so long. He's who you heard of. When they first brought Mike Gersh up to the GM role, and Mo was established as the Pobo, which was this promotion, because the title needed to reflect the work he was already doing behind the scenes. They also hinted like, hey, Mike Gersh, you're going to see a whole lot more of him, and Mo won't have to do this every time. He won't have to be the guy that's the voice every time. Some of those responsibilities can be shifted. Well, COVID happened, and that kind of went out the window, I think, is really the way you needed to have the consistent voice through a period like that. And then specifically COVID happened to the Cardinals with everything that was going on that summer for them. It was a nightmare. So, like, I think that's part of why people go, well, Mike Gersh, we really don't. Yeah, I think that's part of it. Is it just happened organically? COVID happened, and Mo's got to kind of guide the team through that. And then, you know, you're a year later and suddenly Mo's talking about retiring, and that's going to be, or stepping back, however you frame it. And that's where I think, again, you would have started to see a little more. And then 2023 happened, where it's the team's so bad, Mo's got to be the one to kind of answer the questions when they do need answered. So all of those things are kind of playing in. But that's what it is. With Wilson and with Sonny, I think you can manage it as long as they, on a personal level, are okay with it. And you can sell to them, this is not a rebuild. This is not a three-year plan. This is, here's what 25 is going to look like. Let's let some of those guys that we have blocked in the past, the Lane Thomases that haven't gotten a chance to play through struggles, let's let that happen for a summer. Impart your wisdom, veterans that remain. And Michaelis, if he's there, could be part of that. You know, what do they do with Matz? Like, you need five pitchers, but at the same time, if Matz isn't getting you through five innings right now, you know, is it worth, or do you just say, hey, does anybody take him, pay him to go, whatever it might end up being? But whatever veterans do remain can sort of take on that role. And then you say, guys, we're going to fill the needs after that. We're going to commit to spending, but just a quick reset is all that it's going to take. And maybe you're able to convince a couple of those guys that, hey, you don't need to demand a trade. Everything's going to be good here. And it actually could be kind of an exciting brand of baseball, which brings me to, let's get into it. What could the lineup look like in 2025 if you do end up having to pull the shoot on this thing? I'll just kind of let you go, Josh, and then I'll pick you apart if I disagree. Let me know what you're kind of thinking.
I went ahead and put a mock lineup together, and I'm going to go on the front end. I have Donnie leading off at first base, but I think there's a world where they convince Contreras or Herrera to kind of get some reps there, and 100%. See if maybe one of them can figure that out. But, I mean, it's like right now, Donnie is a placeholder DH, but he plays everywhere.
So you even have Donnie a batting order. Is that what it is? Okay.
I went ahead and put it
better
together.
Than me.
I got the positions to
Jordan
Walker in right field, batting second. Or maybe the order doesn't matter as much, but this is the
But do the order. It's kind of fun. People love a good lineup.
Donnie leading off, Jordan Walker batting second. I'm going to assume Ollie's still the manager, so he loves the right-left stuff, so let's keep that in there too.
Which, by the way, right now he's not even doing it every day because it's – but that's fine. We're just, you know, we're just having fun with this. I like it.
Totally. Nubar in left, Contreras catching, Gorman go back to third. I think that makes a lot of sense if you're bringing up Thomas to JC. So Yvonne Herrera is like that placeholder DH. Pajes can be the backup, which long-term too, this is a tangent we can get into another time, but I don't really think you need to carry three catchers.
You
know, you've got two guys when you got one guy DHing every day.
You know what? Let's do this right now, because this is, I thought that too at first, and then we saw something really interesting happen the other day.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason you saw and Ollie even said, and people, I'm going to do this right now, and it's going to put you in a bad spot. And so you don't even have to say anything, but I'm going to say it to you because, and again, I'm going to be very, very clear. This is not Josh Jacobs doing it. But you do a great job with Redbird Rants. But there are some fan-sided national articles that I see where they just pick apart the words, and it's clickbaity, and I'm not fond of it. And you have nothing to do with that. It's not even fair for me to say it to you. But I saw one the other day where I'm like, it's like Ollie Marmol puts himself in the – and it's like, look, I did a YouTube podcast about Ollie Marmol, what he said about Steven Matz. Thought it wasn't a good look. But some of the stuff, it's like not every single quote from Ollie needs to be picked apart on that level. And so if you're on the Facebook pages that are going, yeah, Ollie stinks, you guys are feeding into a brain worm loop that you shouldn't be feeding into. But that's my soapbox. I don't even need you to respond. It's on the mind because I see that and I'm like, okay, what the heck? But anyway, people didn't like that you could kind of throw Herrera under the bus per se by saying what he said. What he said's true. They don't want to give away 90 feet in a close game late. Herrera's 0 for 12, I think it is, on throwing out base runners. Two wild pitches in that game that should have been blocked, frankly. I thought they would have been called pass balls, and they weren't. And so he said, look, we're going to bring in the defensive option there. So I honestly think you'll see more of that if you're in a tight game late. What I don't know if I agreed with was Herrera's bat is up. You know, he's fourth up. Yeah. You could have done it in the ninth. But then when you look at it, who was coming up in the eighth, if there was a guy that got on for the D-backs, because I went into all this, and I want to kind of get your thought on it, and then we'll get back into the meat of this thing. There was a guy, if they get a guy on, 1-2-3 was like the Christian Walkers and sort of the power hitters. I think Peterson was in that mix. But then it would have been, I think, McCarthy, Carroll were the next two to come up. And those guys would have represented the tying and go-ahead runs if they got to the plate in the eighth. And those are who's going to try to steal a base on you. And it would have been in a world where the inning was already spiraling on the pitcher if he's letting guys on. So you cut that off at the pass and say, hey, we're going to make sure they got to earn it if they're getting those 90 feet. I thought it was a fine thing to do. I think Herrera, they have said, look, he's made strides, but I think there are still some weaknesses there behind the plate, and that's one of them. And so that, to me, I agreed with your take. Why do they need three catchers? You don't need it. It's a waste of a spot unless they're going to use it. And in that case, they did. Yeah. And I said, all right, if that's how you want to use it, it's neither here nor there if I love it or hate it, but I can absolutely see the argument of why you'd want Páez on the roster if that's how you feel about him defensively.
For sure. And I think more so with that comment, because when I saw that too, and also you just see Ivan Herrera behind the plate right now, pass balls, not throwing out runners. It's a work in progress. I mean, more so if they commit to Herrera long-term as a catcher and Contreras, I think at some point you should not have to have a third catcher. And if you do, then one of those guys is a DH or a first baseman. And it's Herrera right now, not Contreras, which if you kind of asked me going into the year, who's the guy who might transition away from catcher, or like Willie in a heartbeat, but it's actually the opposite. So I think more so in that vein, but
I like
your point in that game, like I actually like how Ollie's been pretty quick to bring in Ciani, Páez, and treating these games like playoff games, where he's like, I'm not afraid to go to my best relievers, not afraid to go to my defensive lineup to hold a lead because it can spiral quickly. We saw that happen in 2023. Let's do that. I'll say one thing on the National. I would just say, when you read a fan side of things, see if it's from the National website or Redbird Rants before you email me, because a lot of times it's not.
Yeah, that's the thing too. And you're not even ripping. You're being very professional about
control.
It. He just can't. What he's saying is, I can't answer an email about an article I didn't write. That's all you're saying.
Yeah.
You're not ripping fan sided by any means. So don't say, Josh said this. No. That's not what it is.
Nope.
But just see who wrote it, and then yell at him if you didn't like it, and he happened to write it. That's totally fair game.
So I only control what I write. So so DH Herrera, figure that out. So I'll go through the order again. Donnie, first base, but he moves around still. We all know that. Walker in right field, Newbar in left, Contreras at center, or not center. Wow, that'd be wild.
Look at you.
Catcher. we're really going off the rails here. Gorman, go back to third there. Herrera at DH. You got Wynn at shortstop. I feel like at that point, you probably have Thomas at JC up, so you're playing in the second base every day. And then probably Victor Scott batting ninth. And we figure things out. And that's a really fun lineup.
Isn't it
like
fun?
I look at it and it looks like, I mean, it's not a top unit in baseball, but like you've got speed, you've got power, you've got young guys. I could see it being middle of the pack, maybe overachieve and be a little bit better.
Go in the YouTube comments, listeners, right now, and tell me that's not fun. Again, it's all context. We're talking about a lineup where they're not spending as much money and nobody's going to love that. And so get that part out of the way and yell about it if you're mad, which I get it. It's not going to be fun. But in the context of this hypothetical rebuild happens, you're buying some tickets and you're going to go watch that lineup. You're still going to go.
Yeah. And it's pretty good defensively too, which I like too. And then you give it 2025 and I'm just going to pick out random names. It's not necessarily these guys, but you go through the season and you're like, okay, Thomas at JC, he's more of a backup infielder. Probably shouldn't be playing him every day. And Ivan Herrera, he can't catch, so he's a DH. And then Victor Scott, he's still not ready. Then the Cardinals in the offseason can go after a new center fielder. They can go out. They haven't really needed to go get position players recently, but they could go out and do something like that. Whoever they draft in this upcoming draft, it feels like guys come up quicker and quicker now. Maybe they start getting quicker towards that, or maybe whoever they get back for Ryan Helsley in a trade. Or there's just different pieces we don't know about right now. And then if they really are hovering around 100 million, like you said, they can convince Sonny Gray and Wilson Contreras that we're going to go out and spend on. I don't even know who the free agents are in 2026, but it feels a lot more realistic to me when the Cardinals are spending like the 25th highest payroll in baseball that they will go out and sign a bigger name than when they've been hovering around the 14th, 15th and giving a big contract vaults them into a space they never really want to be. I could see them doing that with this or going out and signing these guys like a Walker, Nootbaar, Gorman to long-term extensions, giving those pillow contracts for now where it's like, hey, we're going to pay you $5 million more this year than you would have made otherwise, but now we don't have to pay you X amount of dollars later, which gives them some flexibility down the line. It's kind of a fun team, and I think Cardinal fans might actually like it more than you would think right now, where I feel like there's a lot of people that usually I think it's a vocal minority rather than the majority, but there's people out there who have been saying tear it down for 3 years now.
And tired of being in the middle, right? Tired of trying to scrape up that ladder, and then as you get to the top rung, you get kicked down because you're fighting upstream. They say just accept maybe that you're going to be in the middle or even a step behind the middle. Here's what Cardinals fans can't have, and they think they could, but they don't have the stomach for it. They don't have the stomach for a Cubs or an Astros or an Orioles type of rebuild. They don't. But this wouldn't require that. However, we love the lineup. We think it's interesting. We think it's fun. I would probably have Donnie at second base. But then again, I think it makes more sense because Sejacy might be a better bat than who I'd be putting there at first, whether that's, you know, Burleson or whatever else you have, you know. Luke and Gorman. Baker's kind of struggled. Gorman at third is 100% in agreement. Like, he's going to, I think you can move him to third because Nolan Arenado's going to be out. But, like, is there a third baseman?
Move Gorman
that,
to first?
No, I would put Gorman at third, or I would keep him at second. You could do that. I mean, maybe they do. Maybe at that point they go, look, Gorman's played second for so long. That's his spot. Donnie's going to be your third baseman. And then you're a little bit weak offensively at first base slash DH because as much as we like Herrera, let's see it, you know, for a season before we anoint him in the daily lineup for this hypothetical. But I really do think, one of the catchers can play some first. They'll get some DH time. They'll get some catcher time. And it all kind of can round out to be something relatively interesting. Again, I don't even hate the batting order that you put together. Walker, is he going to stick as an outfielder? I think maybe. I mean, his offense is what we're talking about, but he's actually made some strides defensively to where I look at that 1-9 and I go, all right. Yeah, Cardinals fans, going to read it one more time. And you can move Wynn to lead off, and you can do all sorts of things if you want. Yeah. But Donovan Walker, Nootbaar, Contreras, Gorman, Ivan Herrera, Wynn, Sejacy, Victor Scott. 2025, that's your Dollar Tree lineup if you're the Cardinals trying to sort of go through a bit of a retool. But the pitching, we're going to have to talk about the pitching. So here's the thing. Michaelis is making some money. Steven Matz is making some money. Neither of those guys are going to enthuse fans with the way they're performing now. And if this year goes off the rails, it's probably because those two guys continue to maybe have some of their struggles. But it may just be one of those things where, especially with Michaelis, it's easy to see. You just eat it because he can throw 200 innings. Yeah. And so you just have to eat that in the world where he's going to be like a 1990s kind of starter he'll like he was last year. He'll lead the league in hits allowed, but man, he'll throw 190 innings for you. And that'll just be what it is on the last year of his contract in 2025. Don't know about Matz. Sonny Gray, let's say he stays because, again, there's only so much. There will be a puke point for the fans when it comes to this. Sort of the opposite of the Mo-inspired puke point that he's talked about. Sonny stays. You go Sonny. You go Michaelis. Let's say Matz is... Let's even go, I'm going to be specific. He gets removed from the rotation at some point this year, but turns into a fine enough reliever that you trade him, and it just kind of is what it is, right? Whether you get something for him or not, doesn't matter. Let's take him out, though, because I feel like the listeners are kind of rolling their eyes a little bit about Steven right now. Fair or unfair... It gives us another spot to play with where we can get creative. Yeah. I'm understanding that you like the Helsley idea. I like it too. I'm going to make a rule where I say, he's good where he's at. He's happy where he's at. And whether that's as a closer or a team that isn't trying to win could trade. Like you said, man, Gleyber Torres was half a season of Chapman for the right team. And it worked out for the Cubs, right? Nobody's looking back at that and saying they shouldn't have done it. So I think you could get something for Helsley. I also could say, re-sign him and have him be part of the future. But let's leave him out of this too, because it gives us another chance to look at some other guys. Let's say it's Sonny, Michaelis, and you've got three spots that could be occupied by, I mean, pretty much anybody. Zach Thompson struggled. We don't really know if that's going to be viable. Liberatore, I think he's going to continue on his track as a reliever. But who do you like? Who do you got? Let's start kind of throwing out the names. And again, I know we like Tinkens. I know we like Tekoa Roby. I want opening day rotation 2025 because that's what I, Heim Bloom, have got to sell to Cardinals fans
for sure.
And try to make this viable so I can get people to come to our games. What do you got? What do you got for me?
Yeah, I would feel like as I look at these names, especially because I'm in agreement with you, you rule out Roby, rule out Hence, maybe like mid to late 2025, but
yep.
Opening day, super aggressive, probably not going to happen. So the internal names that come to mind for me is obviously Semer Bursa right now, but it's also a really small sample size. And you think he's still 21 or 22. So he's really young for AAA too.
Pretty young.
And they kind of were aggressive with his promotion because he was in AA for the Blue Jays and they stuck him in Memphis and he struggled. So maybe at that point, especially if he continues what he's doing right now, I don't see how he wouldn't be in that rotation. Gordon Graceffo, he would have spent 2 full years at Memphis at that point. So you would think you got to kind of see what you got in him at some point. And then maybe Zach Thompson's the other guy. But when I look at those names, I kind of wonder if maybe they bring in a third free agent starter to kind of eat some innings. And then they let some of those guys work in relief to piggyback a Michaelis, knowing they might get only 3 innings sometimes. So they kind of get 4 innings from Thompson out of the bullpen to see what happens. But at the same time, if you're not like, they wouldn't necessarily be trying to tank in 2025, but if you're not going all in, why not throw out all the arms out there and see what happens? Because at the end of the day, you're not really, even if you would like to make the playoffs, you know you're not going to do anything there. I mean, we talk about win and get in and see what happens, but this team with this pitching staff, you're not doing anything. It's just not going to happen. But I would like to see, I think off the top of my head, it would be Gray, Michaelis, Sem, Graceffo, and maybe Thompson. I don't really think McGreevy really sells it for me, but maybe he gets
But maybe you have to find out about him too, because he's a former first rounder that, look, I get it. I know that his numbers have been, you know, they've been rough and he doesn't miss a lot of bats, but it's like, you're going to stick him at AAA forever, or you're going to go, hey, buddy, you're going to get, because this team kind of has that blank slate feel to it with the way we're lining up 2025. Come on down, show us what you got. And if it, you go for a month and it's like, yep, kind of struggle like we thought it would be, then all right, you tried and you did what you could. Graceffo, I almost feel like is the same thing. His numbers aren't great at Memphis. His numbers weren't great last year at Memphis. It's kind of why he didn't get his chance. Mozeliak started at winter warmup in 2023 saying those two names at the podium as far as guys that could help him in 23. We never saw a promotion for either. It got to where it just wasn't worth it, you know, with the way the season went. You don't want to bring a guy into that environment necessarily. Bad defense behind you that's not the same every day and ends up, you know, having that first experience in the big leagues. I don't know if either of them are going to end up being big league dudes, but the rotation that we're play tending right now is the one that you do get a chance to find out. And I don't look at it and go, well, he didn't do the Memphis numbers, so you can't bring him up. Teams do that all the time. Teams do that all the time. Not like the Cardinals, but other teams have done it. And sometimes you actually find out, oh, automatic ball strike system, it was just whatever. He's actually better in the big leagues than he would have been in Memphis. What do you know? And then you get leeway to find that out, you know? Yeah. So that's what
Thompson was kind of like that last year. He struggled in the
rotation. Was like
and
that.
Not that he was lighting up at the major league level, but he was better than he was in Memphis.
Yeah. And so you do that. And honestly, that's something that happens this year. If you trade Lynn and Gibson, I'm bringing McGreevy and Graceffo. Those are my two guys because they're two guys that, frankly, I'm not sure are going to make it. But now I've got August and September to tell them, here's your shot to make it. And if you don't, you know, then we don't need to keep clogging up AAA with those guys. If we just don't think that, it's not to say that it's one audition and done out of the org, but you can start to kind of move this along and figure out who you got, who you don't, what you need, what you don't have, all of those things. By throwing guys into the fire a little bit, who, again, not like a Robertson, who he's 22 and is just kind of getting that taste of AAA. Those guys will have spent a year and a half there, both McGreevy and certainly Graceffo, who started there last year. So that's sort of what I would be looking at, even as early as August, if we're talking about a deadline that sees Lynn and Gibson go. Thompson, I just don't know, man. Unless there's an injury that comes out and that's why he's been kind of struggling lower velo, et cetera. There's stuff there for sure. The strikeouts he's capable of getting, he would be in that mix for next year's talk as well. Is it real that Pallante is going to be a starter in the minors they're talking about? I actually don't mind that at all because Andre Pallante, the problem, and Cardinals fans don't like him right now because he comes in with guys on base. He needs that ground ball. He gets it and somebody else's base runner scores. Yeah. Andre Pallante needs the leeway to put his own base runners on, get the ground ball to get himself out of the jam. And honestly, I kind of liked his swagger a little bit when he was a starter a couple years ago in some spot situations in St. Louis. I don't hate the idea of Sonny. And again, people are going to go, that's not a winning team. We know. That's the point. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But you go Sonny, Michaelis, Graceffo, you know, whether it's Thompson or it's just McGreevy to begin the season. Let's say McGreevy has a decent enough spring where you go, yep, ride the rail. Or maybe it's Robertson and then Palante number five, baby. And I know people go, that's not going to work. Okay, but you're talking about just eating some innings and guys who can throw strikes and get ground balls and get you through. He could be, you're going to hate the way this sounds, but like a Dakota Hudson type where get some grounders that gets him out of his own jam sometimes with double play balls. Yeah. Throw that ball into the dirt and make them pound it. Like, I could see a world in which they could find that attractive. It might even be part of this grander parachute plan to go, hey, look, it might not be pretty, but Andre Pallante can go out there and throw five or six innings and give, you know, have a five ERA if that's what it ends up being, or maybe he surprises you. And in a world where we're going to be kind of wanting to not overexpose some of our young Tink Henses and Robies and Robertses next year, but we might need guys to go out there and eat it. Hey, he says, give me a dinner plate. I'm ready to go. And I might be able to prove myself. I'm not going to eat nothing. I'm going to show you I'm a really good pitcher. That's the mindset of a competitor. So I don't hate that at all. The Pallante would be the other name that I would throw in there and say, look, if you don't think these other young guys are ready and you don't want to overexpose them too soon, he's a guy that, you know, you're kind of okay with it, because even as a middle reliever right now, he's getting demoted. So give it a whirl. I don't think that's crazy at all.
No, I like that a lot. And at some point too, like, whether it's Graceffo, Thompson, Pallante, all these names, McGreevy, you might as well throw them out there and see if you can find something in them. Because if you don't, why do you have them sitting in Memphis all the time? Especially when you have Tink, Tekoa coming up, especially in the August-September range. Why not see? And then if one of them gives you enough to believe, hey, let's try it again in April next year. Again, that's not saying, hey, Andre Pallante is forever in the Cardinals rotation. It's just, let's see what happens, rather than signing the equivalent of Kyle Gibson to eat some innings again. It's like, we know that guy's not a part of the future. But maybe, who knows, maybe Pallante is. Two lower-level guys I want to throw out that I think they could aggressively promote, because especially because of their age and experience, would be Quinn Matthews or Cooper Jerby.
I was just going to say Cooper Jerby is another one. But, yeah, we'll talk Quinn Matthews too. Keep going.
Yeah, because Quinn Matthews, this is really interesting. He was he's the guy who threw the 170-something pitch start.
I think it was 156 with Stanford. I'll check on that.
Yeah, something crazy. And he was a low velo guy. And then so far this year, it's been short stints, like four innings, but he's in 95, 96. So he's upped his velocity a ton. He's got swing and miss. I think it's like a crazy strike.
25 Ks in 12 innings right now this year.
So super low. I mean, what is he in Palm Beach right now?
Now that's the thing. He's in low A at 23. It's time to, I get it. He's not throwing many innings, but come on, Cardinals. Here, I'm on screen now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's go. Peoria. Next stop to Peoria. You gotta find out. He's 23.
Yeah. So I could see, like, this again, this is throwing stuff out there, not saying this should happen, but if he is just great this year and this Peoria, double A, probably not opening day, but maybe he's a guy in May, June that finally gets a shot, because again, he'll be 24 at that point. Like, he's not a young guy anymore. But you can let those guys sit for pitching prospects. And then Cooper Jerby, again, hasn't looked pretty mostly in his career so far, but again, he's one of those weird arm angle guys. He sits in the low 90s, but he looks like Chris Sale out there when he's throwing. Deceptive. I know the Cardinals hitters talked about him in spring being like, this guy's kind of weird to hit off of. So whether he's a long-term reliever or you just kind of throw him out there, where you don't want to do a Tink Hentz or Tekoa Roby. You don't want to just throw them out there and see what happens. You want to baby them, get them up to the point where they're set up for all things successful. But maybe the Cooper Jerpies and Quinn Matthews of the world, you can be a little bit more aggressive with, where you actually see a little bit more path of a future there versus a McGreevy. But at the same time, again, you're not going to overdo it, where if they're clearly not ready, you're not going to throw them up there. But those are two interesting names where I think if you told me next May Cooper Jerpy's in the rotation or Quinn Matthews, I wouldn't say it's the craziest thing in the world.
I think it would be a little aggressive, but I understand where you're coming from. It's different from Tink Hentz, and it's, you know, everybody's kind of got their own path, and the Cardinals are going to know versus, oh, we drafted this guy out of high school versus, oh, he was a multi-year college pitcher. Let's kind of let it eat and see what you get from him. I'm going to bring up one more name that it's, you know, not overly on the radar, but we'll know who he is. Again, in this world where you're like, yeah, this isn't a guy that you thought you think would ever, if the Cardinals had expectations to win 90, is not going to be talked about for the opening day rotation. But I want to see what Ian Bedell does this year. Out of Mizzou, was part of that 2020 draft class, got hurt. And so that's why he would have been like that thought process that you had about Quinn Matthews, where they would have pushed him quickly, but he had to miss a year basically. And so it's not really been that way for him. But right now, in just a couple of appearances, he's got 14 innings in Springfield, 3.77 ERA. But you like the 17 Ks over the 14 innings for Ian Bedell, who did really well last year, spent the whole year in Peoria. They, you know, got him back to really, you know, good and healthy and all that. And so they brought him along slow there, but I wouldn't be surprised. You bring Ian Bedell to spring again in a world where it's just there's a crater in the middle of the rotation. And this time they're not signing anybody to fill it because they said, we got to see what we've got. And if we don't have guys, we'll ship them out and we'll replace them with the guys that, you know, we develop or draft or whatever. That would be another name that I would go. Ian Bedell, kind of interesting, where could be just totally off the radar now. But in this world where anything kind of goes, let's say they do find a way to move Mats and Michaelis, and maybe Gray goes, love you guys, but I'd like to pitch where I can win. Could you do something for me? And maybe they say, sure, check out this Pittsburgh Pirates payroll. Like, they could do anything. In that world, maybe Bedell is interesting too. All right, we've gone an hour. This has been incredibly fun. I'm even going to frame it like, when I send this out, probably one of the more fun podcasts I've done this year, just because we're talking about some very interesting hypothetical stuff. So Cardinals fans, if you enjoy this as well, throw some love in the comments, throw some love as well to Josh and his podcast, Dealing the Cards, which you can find on all platforms, YouTube and Spotify, and it's out there everywhere. So follow Josh. His Twitter handle is right there below at the bottom of the screen, Josh Jaco MLB. Make sure to subscribe to this channel as well for Cardinals content all season long. But Josh, any parting thoughts about this little thought experiment that we just went through together?
Like you said, it's fun. And it makes me think, like, again, this is, I don't think they're heading toward this. If you ask me what they're going to do, I think they're going to be in it. And who knows if they make the playoffs, but I think they're going to try and compete this year. But if they have to go this route, it's not doom and gloom. I don't feel like you're not heading toward a Washington Nationals, Houston Astros, Chicago Cubs rebuild. It's fun to think about how this team could be young, fast, explosive at times. It's going to look really good some days, look really bad some days. And you get to follow the development of guys for a little bit rather than hanging on every win and loss. So, if this is the direction they go, Cardinal fans, I mean, tell us how you feel in the comments for sure. Would you like this route or not? I wouldn't hate it. It would be kind of interesting. And honestly, it might make them a better team in 2027, 2028 than if they kept going for it now. Sometimes you just need to take a little bit of a reset to help your future out. So maybe this is the path you didn't want to go, but ends up being the best thing for them long term. So who knows?
And Cardinals fans, I really do believe, would have way more fun watching that play out than either they think they would, or certainly more fun than they're having right now, where it feels like the pressure and expectation is you got to win. You can't continue to embarrass yourself like this. They can't have a losing record. Whereas, like, okay, the Royals lost 106 games last year, but right now they're like teetering a couple games above 500, and their fans they're having a party because they're like, hey, we actually are exceeding expectations right now. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's going to stick all year. Like the Pirates, for instance, are having a good time going, hey, we're kind of in the mix on this thing, and it's earlier than we thought it would be. And that can maybe be a refreshing thing that, honestly, Josh, Cardinals Nation might need that. Like, the fan base doesn't even know what, it's just kind of gotten into this funk of, you know, angst and anger and bitterness. And again, I'm not trying to rip the fans. I just think that it could actually serve to maybe make everybody happier in the long run. I don't know if you agree with that.
No, and last point, because I don't want to make this hour 30.
Yeah. No, I know. We always love to end a podcast and take 20 minutes to end it.
It's fun. But I mean, this is probably, not probably, this is part of the issue of when you're a team that tries to compete every single year and you don't do what all other teams do, where they kind of do the 3-year window, they scale it back and they tank and they get the prospects. Like, you kind of get into these middling years where you have to nail every draft pick, you have to nail every trade, you have to nail every signing, because you don't have all these extra shots out of the, you have very few bullets to shoot here, especially when you're not spending $200-300 million on the payroll. So again, maybe one step back for 1 year, instead of trying to scrape and claw every year and patch the holes. Instead of patching the holes, how about we empty the ship a little bit here, bring on some new cargo, figure out how to make this trip again for a sustainable 5-year stretch, rather than every single year having a 1-year frame of, we can't go all in because it could totally blow up on us, but we don't want to be bad either. So let's try and figure out how to get to 90 wins. Maybe reset a little bit.
Yeah, put the Flex Seal tape away for a little bit and say, you don't have to keep plugging the hole in the bottom of the boat. Maybe just kind of build a new boat, replace some of those boards. So let us know in the comments what you think of this thought experiment. Again, we're not saying it's happening for sure, but we wanted to walk you down. And Josh was the perfect person to do this with, because I've talked about this before, but it's hard to spend an hour on a topic that is honestly, it may never come to fruition. And many folks probably hope it doesn't, but been a lot of fun, Josh. Once again, follow Josh in the Deal in the Cards pod everywhere you get your podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks, Josh, for joining me again today. It's been a blast. And we'll talk to you next time on the Brendan Schaefer St. Louis Cardinals Writer channel. Peace.